Hello and welcome to another episode of Could It Be Podcast. Today we're sharing Julie's story. Julie joins us all the way from Canada and she shares her story of having one polyurethane implant put in when she was quite young. She had the implant for 30 years and had a massive list of symptoms that she encountered during that time. It was quite debilitating for her. Julie is involved in GPAC, so I will include some links in the show notes to the Global Patient Advocacy Coalition. She's sort of works in the background to help them out as much as possible. I'll put some contact details for Julie in the show notes because she is happy for women to reach out to her for some help and just to have a chat about the whole explant experience. And she's very, very helpful, very, very knowledgeable. And I'm so glad she joined me on the episode. So here is Julie's story. Welcome to the podcast, Julie.
Thank you.
Do you want to start by telling us a little bit about yourself and where you're joining us from today?
Yes, my name is Julie Christie. I'm from Quebec, Canada. I'm in the French part of the Canada. And I would like to say to you my story about my breast implant because I got it for 30 years.
30 years. Right. Well, do you want to tell us about initially getting breast implants? Tell us about that story.
Yes. I got it at age of 17 years old, and that what I remember about that, it's I was just going to see a doctor just for a natural checkup, and it was a man doctor, and he said to me that I had an asymmetry from my breast, and he said that it might be looking better if I have it equal breast for my intimacy. So first I didn't want to react or say something to the doctor because at 17 years old, at that time in the 80s, you know, we don't have computers and we don't have internet and all that. And then I was really shy and I didn't want to say to the doctor that, why are you saying this, you know? So not accept, but just agree that, maybe he was right that my intimacy will not be good if I have not the same size of breast. So he said, oh, it's really easy. You just need to go see a surgeon and she will just put you an implant inside and nobody will know and you'll be just okay. So I ended up to be in a surgeon consultation. The lady that was there, she was really a good person. She was looking good also. She was really kind to me, tried to be like a mother for me. She was really nice, kind and sweet and talking very in a good way. And she said that there will be no problem. It's easy to do. She'll just ask our government to pay for it because I was born like this. So when you're born, it's kind of a sickness. You're not normal. So they're going to pay for it. And she said to me, she showed it to me. It was a shape, a round shape. It was kind of a yellow beige color. Mm-hmm. And it was on her desk and she took it and she showed it to me so I can touch it. And she said, it's a really good one. It's a new one. It's a texture shell, so when you're gonna put it inside, it won't move, it will be perfect, and nobody will know nothing about this. And that was the first thing I ended up to it, because I said, okay, if no one knows, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. Because it was my biggest fear for all the 30 years I had it, and I didn't want no one to know that I have a fake one. I was so shy, I was even more than shy. I was really ashamed. I wanted to hide this because I'm an authentic person and I didn't want to be fake. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to hide it all the time, make sure that no one knows. So it was a really big problem for me for 30 years. So when I took it out, not only all my symptoms are gone, but especially the feeling of, oof, now I'm free, I'm natural. So that was the biggest feeling I had to be emotionally, to be free.
What were the symptoms that you ended up having because of the breast implant?
The first symptoms, it was immediately. I got a problem with the emotion, like depression, feeling no good. Mm-hmm. And more than that, it's that when she put it inside, it was in May 1988, and the scar didn't close. So there was a hole inside, maybe a hole, I don't know, like a, let's say, like a the end of a crayon, a pencil, like mm-hmm. A round shape. It was, yeah. It was open, and then the blood was coming out, the translucent liquid, yellow color, green color, and purple color. Mm-hmm. And she left me like this. Even if I went to see her, she said, oh, I don't know. So she just leave me like this for 6 months.
Oh, my God. And,
so I was with 6 months, a hole inside my chest. Under the breast, and I needed to put a gauze to put inside my bra to absorb all the liquid, to change it more than one time a day. And so finally, in November 1988, she said, you need to have emergency surgery because you're poisoned. But the way she said it, she said that there's no problem. I'm just going to clean everything, take everything out, and you'll be okay. And a few months later, we'll put you another one. So I didn't question again. I thought she knows what she's doing. And she said she cleans everything. There's no worry. So she took it out. And the first thing that I should have remark, it was that when she put it in May, I gained weight already. I was like inflamed. And when she took it out in November, I just shrink like I was usually, like I was before.
Yeah.
But I didn't pay attention to that detail because they just say maybe you're stressed, maybe you're not in a good situation for now, because I was kind of a love affair, you know, when you're a kid and you love someone, but you don't know how to love, and then mm-hmm. you break up and then you come back again. So maybe it was an emotional problem. Maybe it was your female hormone, because you're 17, you're starting to be a woman. So maybe it's all that mixed up that makes this.
Yeah.
And after that, I left with no breast implant, and she put it back in August 1989. So mm-hmm. close to 9 months later. And then since that day, I started to have also the depression symptoms. And then I started to have a long, long list. I think I have over 69 symptoms. I show you. Yeah. I have a Excel document like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it all the symptoms, and I put when I have my implant, all the symptoms I had, and when I took it out, what I have. And like it's a miracle, or I don't know, not a miracle, because it's not something like spiritual, but it shows to me that it's a real thing. The symptoms are real, and that makes me wanted to share my story, and I don't want to shut up anymore. I want to share it, because if I have it for 30 years, I know what I'm talking about. Mm. I know that I've been through doctors and doctors and doctors. I went to see ophthalmologist for the nose, for the mouth, for the throat, for the ear, for the hair, for the face, for the skin, for the inside the liver, the stomach, the intestine, all those different doctors for the bone, for the muscle, for the training, for everything I went to see. And each time it was, you have nothing. Mm-hmm. Or each time you have something, but we cannot find the result because the results are negative. But you seems to have symptoms, so we don't know what you have. Or maybe you can try, so they give me different kind of pills to try. Or they say, wait for a few weeks or wait for a few months, and then it was coming back all the time. So for all those years, it was like a circle, and it all ended up to be for them, not for me. But for them to be a psychological problem.
Mm.
So whatever I was saying, because they could not find something, they ended up as, you maybe have a psychological symptoms. So maybe you, because you think this too much, you created it. So that was, that affected me a lot in my life. Because I've done 30 years of psychotherapy. I went to see a psychologist all the time to see, okay, maybe it's true, maybe I have a problem. So I went there all the time, but it was never something really deeply problem, you know? Even if I scratch and look at my past, maybe it's coming from my sister, maybe it's coming from my mother, maybe it's coming from my job, maybe it's coming from my boyfriend. You know, you're looking for everything, but it's not there. It was maybe some problem, but it was not that. So if you like, I can name some of the symptoms.
Yes, please. So, yeah.
I cannot say everything because, of course, I'll forget anyway. I'll try to start from the head, going to toe, to sure. See if I can name some of them. So, the hair was falling apart, like many hair. Like if I do this, it will come. Like if you cut it.
Yeah.
Now it doesn't. Like if I should say, to be more wrap it up, all of the symptoms I would say for now, after explanted, none of them I have it. Mm. I have only a few, and I'll say it after.
Sure.
So for the air, that was a problem. And then if I wanted to put like spray or curl them, after an hour, I had nothing. It all disappears. It never stays inside. And even with the makeup, you know, if you put eyeshadow, you wanted to put some makeup on you, after an hour, everything disappeared. Nothing was staying.
Okay.
And my nails was breaking all the time, or be double. Like I can do that, and many pieces was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And on the side of the fingers, there were the skin really dry, so it cracks and it hurts. You cannot bend the fingers because it hurts so much.
Mm-hmm.
And any type of cream you use or medicine, nothing was putting this back. And I had the same thing with the lips, like all the lips, the skin of the lips was coming out. Mm-hmm. And it was dry. I needed to put lipstick all the times. And my nose was leaking. So I needed to use probably one boxes per day of a Kleenex.
Wow.
One boxes. So sometimes we have 300 papers inside every day of my life. And now that it's over, now I'm going to turn 5 year in February. So I'm 4.5 explanted. I don't know if I use one or two per year instead of per day.
Yeah.
It's not the same at all. And then for the nose also, when I was sleeping, it was all the liquid was coming out inside, you know, because you're laying down.
Yeah.
So How do you say when you want to breathe, but all the liquid is there, you get stuck inside. So I had got this many times. And also I had pain in the head over here. I felt like I had a big tennis ball inside here, pressing inside so hard. I could not take it out. And in the back also, just under the cervelet, I don't know the name in English, but it's under really close where you move. And this was not going away. It was staying like this all the time. It was terrible. And I needed to have glasses to read for the focus for the close, but I was only in the early 20. But those problems, it comes after you're 40. So it was a big problem. And I after years, I started to have hearing problems with the sounds inside, the hearing noise. And then I started to lose my capacity of hearing. So I have hearing aids now. But when I got explanted, in that ear, the right side, I still have it, but it improved. So the voices inside it's lower. And on the other side, I don't need it anymore. Only if I need to be more focused, or there's sounds around, or like now you're in the computer, so the sounds to hear you can be a little bit too low, but besides that, I don't need it anymore. So this is a big improve with the implant or without the implant. And then with the teeth, when I got the implant inside, in few weeks after that, I think I got 9 repairs in my mouth. But I never have problem with my teeth. And suddenly I got like everything was with I don't know the name in English, but you need to fix it. So it happened only like one time, like it was like one shot, bang, 9 in the same time. And after that, it was okay. But still, it was like, for me, it was so weird. How come I have 9 in the same time? And like, yeah, it was so weird. That part of my life was so weird. And then I got the problem. The swallow over here when you eat, when you drink, and more the time was passing, more I could not do it. So at the end, let's say 4 years before, I didn't want to go eat with people at the restaurant, or go to friends' house, or invite friends at my house, or even cook for my own kids, because I could not eat properly. And when I was drinking water, because I could not swallow, the water was coming out from the side of my mouth because I put it inside, and I was really ashamed, and I didn't know what is happening, because each time I was going to see the doctor, they all the time tell me I have nothing. I didn't want to embarrass people, and I didn't want also to be a problem for people, and I didn't want them to worry for me. So I try each time I have a weird problem, I try to hide it instead of sharing it. So maybe it was a mistake, but that was what I've done. I just hide my problem because I don't want to people to get worried for me. And when I was eating, most of the time when it goes to the esophagus, it got stuck inside. And I felt I have not enough space for the food to pass, and I was about to faint all the time, like this. Oh, I was at the table. It was terrible. So many food. I cannot eat potatoes. I cannot eat carrots. I cannot eat apple. Like so, more the year was passing, more I could not eat nothing. So that was a problem. And also, the stomach was all the time very, like I felt it like it was too much air inside, like you blow a balloon inside. It was like really,
Floated.
yeah, you feel big inside, you feel like and hard, really hard, hard. So then it was really uncomfortable, not comfortable at all for the part of the stomach and for the part of the liver, because it was on the left side, and sometimes the side of the liver, the bigger part of the liver, it's on the left side, because it's kind of a triangle shape, whatever. It's smaller on the one side and bigger on the other side. So I know it's more the liver, or so it was hurting me all the time. Sometimes that part of the liver still hurts me, but the stomach doesn't hurt me anymore, and I can drink, I can eat, I can take so many food now, and the esophagus is okay too. All that is good. And after the biggest pain I have, it was the bone pain and the muscle. So the bone pain, it was all the bone everywhere on my legs, especially the left one. I felt like between the ankle and the knee, the bone there, I felt they're gonna break if I'm making how do you say, when you push, you make a pressure. I felt if I do a pressure, it's gonna crack, it's gonna break. So I could not walk what like I wanted to walk, and I could not push something with my legs because I really felt it's gonna break. The bone in the back of the head, it was on my in the spine. I have 15 or 17 little spine there, the little round thing that was not at the good place. So 15, 17, I think it's a lot. And the one in the neck, it was stuck, and I had the head a little bit like this and like this, and I could not turn anymore. It was like fixed, so that was a problem. And the pain was so much everywhere in the back. I felt like I was like 120 20 years old, because it was so much pain, and I could not like lift up when I was sitting down, or if I was in the bed sleeping. I could not just get up. I needed to try to sit first, and then try to put my chest up, and then try to push myself up, and then try to get up, and then try to walk. But I was walking like, let's say this is my back. I was walking like this, and then walking, I was trying to put up to be straight to walk, because the pain was too much. So if you take care of a grandparents or old person, or you go see them somewhere where they live, you'll see that they cannot walk and they have that kind of problem. But I had this in the 30s. So it was really a huge problem for me. I had pain everywhere. I didn't want no one to touch me. Even doing this on the skin, it was already too much. And all the joint over here, I don't know the name of this in
Like a
English.
wrist,
Okay, I have this. It was problem. The fingers, the nickel. No, yeah, the nickel. Oh, you say the one.
Ankle,
Ankle,
ankle.
sorry,
That's all right.
the ankle, the knees, and also the muscle. I don't know how to describe it, but the muscle on the legs, the quad, was hurting me, and I needed like to do this on it to try to make it active, or to like when you sit on your legs too much, and when you get up, you say, "Oh, I have
Pins
ants."
and needles.
Yeah, so I had those kind of feelings in my body. I have it in the back, I have it in the hands, I have it in the arms, I have it in the feet, I have it everywhere. And sometimes when I wanted to walk, I could not put my feet on the floor because the pain was coming like really suddenly, like a huge, huge pain, like, oh, I have pain there. But I didn't know why, but it happened like often. And the same thing for the intestine. Sometimes I had the pain on the right side. The pain was so bad. I could just bend the knee and fell on the floor because it was too much pain inside. Like it was worse than giving birth to my kids.
Yeah.
I had two girls and I know what it is to give birth. And I give and I put them out naturally, like with no drugs, no epidural,
The pain.
So I felt everything.
Yeah.
But the pain in the intestine, oh my God, it's worst of everything else. Mm. It's really no good. So those are kind of all different kind of trouble I had. And I don't know if I said everything, but I hope that if women are listening, they can refer to some of my symptoms that sometimes you don't think it can be that, like with the mouth, with the dry mouth or with the dry skin. You don't think it can be related to it, but it is, because for me now, I don't have that problem anymore. It's the same thing also for drinking water, like you're thirsty. I was so thirsty, I could not stop drinking. And sometimes I make funny jokes and I say, it's good I don't like alcohol, because it would be like a problem with that, because I was drinking and drinking like it was no hands of this, you know, it was too much. And the same thing for the how do you say, the stomach, the pain with the thing that's coming out, like
reflux. Yeah,
the acidity, yeah, it was coming up. I had that many times, and each time they give me a medication, whatever it is, it never works. I tell you, nothing works, and I need to double the medication or triple the medication, but even that, it never works. So I try so many things, but it never works.
Yeah.
So now I'm happy because all of this is gone. And I had also the problem with the lungs to breathe. I felt that I didn't have enough space inside of me. And then I was thinking, oh, maybe it's because I was a premature baby and my lung was not good. So maybe it's because of that. But it was not that, because now I can breathe. So, and I was all the time, I think the name in English is sout or sin. Like when you say,
sigh. Okay. Sigh, yeah.
Yeah, like you don't like something. You're all the time.
Yeah.
So I was doing this so many times. It was part of my natural breathing. So when I was in a meeting, people look at me like many times.
Yeah. Like, are you annoyed?
People were looking at me like if I was, how do you say this?
If you were like annoyed or disgruntled at the meeting because you were sighing all the time. Yeah.
They were looking at me like this if I was like not a good person and I was bored to be there. But it was not that. It just was my way of breathing.
Yeah. You've just reminded me that I used to do that as well. Like people would be like, are you okay? You're sighing a lot. But I think it was to catch up on breathing because I hadn't been breathing properly. So that's how important it is to talk about this. Like you just said before, you've just reminded me that I was doing something that I didn't really think was to do with my breast implants.
Yeah, it's true, right? Yeah. You cannot make a link to it. You don't know after when you take it out, you don't have it anymore. It's gone?
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, it's gone. And also with the breathing, I could not sleep. And I keep saying to the doctors, I cannot sleep because I was waking up in the middle of the night. And the doctor took 20 years to finally say, oh, maybe you have trouble of sleeping with apnea. So mm-hmm. they give me the CPAP machine, you know, the machine you put on your nose to breathe. I got this after 20 years of telling them I cannot sleep. And when I got it, I said to them, I can feel a little bit better for my breathing because I don't have pain in the back when I sleep, but it doesn't help me with my brain. So they say it's not possible. First, they don't believe me. And they just leave me like this and they do nothing. So after I got explanted, I got the test again. And the test is negative and I just throw away that machine. I don't have apnea anymore. And so I'm so happy for this because it was not a good thing to sleep with this.
No, it's not good. Like I know of people who have the machine and whose partners have the machine and it's noisy for anyone else as well, but it would be uncomfortable to get used to. Like I move around a lot in my sleep. You'd be restricted. Like you wouldn't be able to do
because
that.
Because you need to move it all the time like this.
Oh, goodness.
So it's not good at all. It was not a good part of my life to sleep with it, but now it's gone. So now I have my hair, I have my skin, I don't have problem, nothing over here to the digestive system. Everything is okay. I just have the liver a little bit that bothers me. I have sometimes a little bit of a problem with the concentration, but for that, I'm not sure because I had also traumatized on the head, like when you get a hit and you have trauma on your head for the brain. So that I had it many times. But when I tried to do the best to be objective, I think that because I was so many years inflamed everywhere, I think it had affected that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that even if I have the trauma, I think under that, it was because I was too much inflamed everywhere. Because especially because I know because the nose was all the time full of a sinus. The sinus was all blocked everywhere.
Yeah.
And I can feel it inside in the head over here and the head in the back. So I think I have too many things inside my head also, not only in the body. I think it goes everywhere. Sometimes I don't know if it's possible. And I ask my daughters or whatever who wants to speak with me about this. But I say one day when I'm going to die, because everyone's dying. So I hope it's going to be really far. But when I'm going to die, I don't know if I can give my body to a research.
Mm-hmm.
But especially for the BII, for the silicone, to if they can check everywhere, if there's something that can show that it affected my body. So I would be curious about this. So I don't know if I can find a place where they do that kind of research. I would be willing to give it away when I die for them to make research for this. I would like that. So if anyone hears about this, let me know.
Yeah, reach out. I haven't heard anything yet, but given the fact that more people are talking about BII now, it might be something that they do in the future.
Probably.
Because
especially for the silicone, because the one I have was a textured, it was a gel, was silicone gel, and it was a polyurethane, industrial polyurethane. So I don't know if I pronounced correctly, but it was that.
Yeah.
And the shape over it, the shell, was the texture one, and all this disappeared in my body. So it was only the under the shell that the implant was there, but all the top of it, the texture one, it disappeared. So it's inside of me somewhere, all in pieces everywhere. So
Yeah.
that this is a it's a danger, and a woman should know that, because we still have on the market at different place around the world textured one. They still exist. I know some places they ban the silicone one, but they still have textured, because some places they say it stays better inside and won't move as much as the one that it's really
Smooth.
smooth.
Yeah.
So it's not the same. So my implant was analyzed by a chemist, and his name, probably people know him, and now he's retired, but his name was Pierre Blais, and he lived in Ottawa, and he did my analyze, and he reported 55 pages of problem. So that's
Whoa.
a lot, and it's not
Yeah.
like on a Word document at the, let's say, Arial number 12, number 14, like big written. It's really small written, like in a report, really small. And then he said to me, because I spoke with him on the phone many times, and he said to me, he doesn't know why I'm alive. I should be dead, because what I have was a morbidin implant, and I should see an oncologist many times, but my doctor, my family doctor, didn't believe nothing, didn't even want to read the email that he sent to me. She didn't take the report also. So, of course, I don't have her anymore. but here we have a problem, so we don't have any more doctor. I need to find one, but I didn't find one, and not yet. And also, I've went to see another specialist. His name is Jean-William Cohen Treveret. I think he's from Netherlands, but I'm not sure. I think so. He still is in Alberta in Canada, and is the director of the Department of Research for the university, and he's also the chief of the rheumatologist department. And he's the only one in Canada who's doing research on the breast implant, and also, he's the one who diagnosed the ASIA sickness, like the autoimmune with autoimmune inflamed by adjuvant. I think it's that the name. I'm not sure, but I can write it to you so you can put it down, because I'm sure I pronounce it correctly. And so he diagnosed me this, and that was a good consultation. It was like 3 hours and a half consultation. It was so long. And he did many blood tests and x-ray lungs. And it was the first time I was talking to a doctor and feel inside, let's say, I don't know the name in English, but relief. I feel relief, because he understood all the symptoms, and I didn't have to say it. He was saying the symptoms before me, and he was saying, did you have this? He knew all the list of the symptoms, and that makes you feel for the first time that you've been heard and you've been believed. So it was something like really emotional part that you have, that you feel warm inside. You feel like, oh, I finally someone who knows what I'm being through. And he was really, really a nice person, really kind and soft and empathic also. He was really good. So I really liked him a lot. And for the surgery, I flew from Quebec to United States in Ohio, in Cleveland. And I wanted to see the summitee, I don't know if it's the good word, the pioneer, the first person who gave up all her career to explant. So her name, most of people know her, but if not, you can go and Google her. You'll see that she's really good. It's Dr. Lu Zhangfeng. And now I can write it, the words to you, but Dr. Sure. Fanny, she's a woman, and her also in her consultation, it was at least 2 hours also. She is really nice, and she did an amazing job, and it was good. I saw her. I don't know if I can say this, but yeah, maybe it's okay. I've done some tests in Quebec, like ultrasounds and MRI, and everything here says I have nothing. But about 5 days later, I was in the United States doing the same exam because she asked for it too. Mm-hmm. But over there, they saw all the silicone pieces. So this was like a shock for me because in my own country, they say, you have nothing. And when I go there, they do the same machine, the same test. And they say, you have all the silicone. So the doctor took a blue pen and started to mark my body. Oh, you have here. So Dr. Fang knows where to go and get it out. Mm. And she said to me, it's a good thing you choose me because I have so many years of experience. I knew where to look. I knew where to take out the pieces. If you take someone who doesn't have experience, they will just take everything, close, and leave it like you, and you'll still be more sick. Mm-hmm. So I was like, blessed, like, oh my God, thank you. And I can send you, if you like, the picture of the implant.
Sure. Because,
yeah. You'll see, she put the pieces that she found outside the capsule and inside the capsule. And even if the first doctor in 1988, when she took it out, remember she said she took everything out because I was poison, but she didn't take it out, even if she say so.
Yeah.
Because Dr. Feng found it. And even in the pathology test and in the ultrasound test, they say it. It was there. So that makes me think the importance of knowing what surgeon's gonna do the job.
Yes.
Because they can say to you, or they can even write it in the report, because I have my report from 88 and 89. I have it. And they say everything is okay, but it is not in the reality.
Mm.
This is a big question. Like, is it because the surgeon think he's done a good job, or the surgeon lie about it? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know it's wrong because Dr. Feng found everything and we have it. So we cannot invent something that is not there, you know?
Exactly. So
this is a big problem, and this is why I want to share my story, and I want to say to all the women who's listening, don't rush to take it out. Take more time, but make sure you have a real good surgeon, because it can make all the difference. And this is what it is most important, to have a good surgeon that you believe and that can give you proof that he's having the expertise to do it. And it needs to be an en bloc. And if the en bloc is not possible, it needs to be the capsulectomy, the total capsulectomy. And that it's an important thing to do. And you can listen to Dr. Chung. You can have also the reference on that. He's making a lot of videos on this that he explains, and podcasts also. And also Dr., I think his name is Shaker, but I'm not sure if I'm
pronouncing. Oh, yeah. Shakur, yeah, I think I've seen the name.
So it's the same thing. So those kind of doctors, they explain it in a professional way. And if you listen to them, then when you go see a surgeon, you'll know what to look and you know what to expect. And this is important.
How did you find out about breast implant illness?
I found out about the breast implant illness. It was a coincidence because it was 2 years I was invalid. I was out of work. I was bedridden. So I was most of the time on my sofa watching TV and being so depressed and being so sick. And on TV, there was an interview. And the man who gives the interview, it was to a young lady. She was there with her lawyer, and they were talking about different symptoms with the breast implant. And that catches my attention. And I said, oh, maybe I'm bedridden and sick because I have one implant. So I just listened to his interview. And for me, it was like a skylight, like bang, my life suddenly was all clear. I knew it was this. And inside that interview, they give a reference to another TV show. It was for I don't know the name, enquête in English, like a documentary. And in that documentary, I listened to it, and it was Dr. Pierre Blais, the one I spoke that did my analyze, and it was also Dr. Feng, the one I went to see. So that is why this is when I realized breast implant exist. And those are the two doctors that I found that helped me. And now I can walk and do it whatever I want. I have a little bit of problem with the ear. That's why I wear it sometimes, but it was not that bad. It improved. And I have a little bit problem with the liver, but it improved. And for the sleeping problem, it's only the mind that doesn't stop too much. And this is a Dr. Cohen Tourette. He said to take melatonin. Said it's better to take it 3 hours before you sleep, so it can regular your circle of sleeping. But it works, but not all the time, all the time. But still, it improved. So beside those problem, I don't think I have any more problem with my health, and that for me, like, it's amazing. I can
That's
live.
it. Yeah, because you had your implant for 30 years, so you were sick for that long.
Yeah, that's too much because this is 2/4 of my life, and it's all my young years that I lost. That makes me really sad when I think of it because those are the years that you could do so many things, but I was all the time being stuck because I have too much health problem. And I could not get it anymore. Whatever I do, I cannot go back. So the only thing I can do is to share my story to take the sadness of that and change it into, okay, now I'm gonna speak up. And I write my book also. So it's not released now. We cannot buy it, but it's done. And I hope to have it maybe this next year or soon. It will be in French, but if I can do it also in English or maybe other languages, I'll be so happy to just share the story so people know. And I have also conferences that I will start doing in few months, so I can teach people also. And also, I wanted to help women more because I see they're really healed and they really have pain, and they have sometimes difficulty processing this problem. Whatever, if it's because they're like me, they have too much pain when they think about the hurt they've done to themselves, or the hurt about people that passing through their life and saying bad things to them when they see the doctors, or they cannot accept themselves with the new breast, with or without, or now it's smaller, now it's softer, now it's smooth, it's going down, it's going up, there's no more. Also, some people, they don't have any more. So I prepare some activities to do with women. So I'm gonna do meditation, yoga, and art craft, and written also. So I mixed different things together to like a complete day, like let's say like 9 to 5, just a small group of women, so we can talk and do something to grow from this, to take something better from this and leave what hurts us too much. This is what I prepared to do.
That's amazing that you do that. I think it's super important, and I think that's where, like, you know, where we don't have access to, like, almost like a women's healing circle that you do, that we have things like podcasts, YouTube videos, Facebook groups where you're sharing that together, because there will be somebody new that comes into those Facebook groups or into those circles and they're feeling like they're not alone. And then, like, I have never met a community that's more supportive. Like, everyone just supports everybody. And like the amount of people that I'll reach out to and say, like, would you like to be on the podcast? And so many people say yes, because they want to share their story, make sure other people aren't feeling alone, give like any kind of advice along the way as well. And like that's one positive thing that we can take from this whole experience is the fact that we're now making friends across the globe and we're helping people.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. We're helping all each other. This is the strongest community I ever met. We're all stuck together and we're helping each other. We have, I don't know if the name in English is okay, but it's sorority.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good word. Okay. We have this really strong. So, it's a good thing we found each other.
Yeah, absolutely. On the topic of helping people, do you have any advice for somebody who is explanting? Like, was there anything that you bought or that you did around your surgery that you found helped you?
The thing I've done, because I went alone, so I had nobody with me. So I've done that. My baggage was the lightest weight, because after the surgery, it cannot lift.
Yeah.
So I prepared already. It needs to be really little and really light. And when I took the plane, I already typed the information that I needed to have help at the airport. So they have someone waiting for me with a wheelchair. So I thought of this, and that was really helpful, because the man was take, or the woman, whoever it was, took the baggage for me, sit me in the wheelchair. So I didn't have to stress for nothing. I didn't have to lift up nothing. That was really good. And I took a small carry-on bag, so I have it with me in the plane. I don't need to go down and wait to get my baggage. So, and I prepared myself before, because you cannot move your hands for at least 2 weeks.
Mm.
You need to put it tight around you if you want to heal properly, you know. So I prepared myself at home before. So I strap up my arms like if I was already explanted, even if I was not. Try to do my things only with my left arm, because for me, I had only one implant. So it was my right side. Try to use my other hand, try to go to the toilet, to brush my teeth, to do everything, to just kind of knowing what kind of feeling it will be for 2 weeks. So I just prepare a little bit myself. This is what I've done, and I felt it was a good idea for me to try this.
Yeah.
And I bought already the bra that with the zipper in front, so it helps. And I tried to have also all my t-shirts with zippers in front, with shirt with zippers. And I needed also, how do you say this, like give love to yourself and give time to yourself. Don't rush to do whatever you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Take time to heal.
Yeah.
This is the most important thing. Take time to heal. Don't rush. And love yourself. So don't bother about your hair if you look good. Don't bother if your nails are done. Don't bother if you have your beautiful pants and your beautiful shoes. Don't care about this. Even if it takes 2 or 3 months, don't care about this. Because if you think about it, you say, what is it 2 months of my life not looking that good for maybe 40 years coming up in the front, you know? So take that time to heal properly. Prepare some snack before in a freezer. Yes. Try to have people around you to help you. If you don't help yourself, do it by your own. Prepare before and just do less.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll heal better. Because after the surgery, I don't know if it was for you, but for many women after the surgery, you feel like you are a brand new person. You feel energy, you want to move, you feel so good, no pain, no swallow everywhere. You're feeling so good. You want to move, but you need to wait.
You need slow to hop, yep.
You it's need
so
to
important.
Wait. Yeah, yes. It's really important. This is what I think is most important.
Mm-hmm. Slow it's down. Very true. Like I felt like I could do more than I was allowed to, but I still listened to what the doctor said to me, and I even waited. Like she sort of said to me I could start like going back to the gym after 8 weeks, but I was still very careful for the first few weeks because I didn't want to go backwards in my healing. It's yeah, very important that you do pace yourself yeah. in those few months, because it's not just you're having major surgery to have the implants removed, but also anesthetic itself is very harsh on the body too. So you need to give yourself time to heal from both.
Yes, it is. It's true. It's better to have more, like you said, if it's 8 weeks, you can put 4 more weeks
yeah.
to make sure you go slowly, to make sure that everything is fixed inside, and eat properly with fruits and vegetable for at least a year. Please don't eat junk food. Take time. Eat something that it's not with too much fat or too much salt or too much in a can or too much in the boxes, mm. like transformed food. You try to avoid this for at least a year, so you'll heal better and you feel better. Because if you put that inside, it's like you stop your healing, but you
slow it down.
Yeah, you slow it down. That was the word I was looking for. You slow it down. Yeah. Yeah.
What was the recovery from explant surgery like for you?
The explant surgery, it was feeling much better than the implant when you put it in.
Mm-hmm.
The explant, for me, was not hurting. Like when I put it inside, I felt the pain, could not move no more.
Yeah.
But once you took it out, I had no pain. I felt really, really good. I didn't have that pain. And I didn't take also medication, because you can have medication to control the pain mm-hmm. after a surgery. But to me, I just took the Tylenol, regular medication on the shelf. And mm-hmm. I think I took it just because she said you can take it. But I think it was only for 1 day or two. I didn't take it. It was okay. I don't know if it's because Dr. Feng I don't know the name of it, but it's a specific anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
So you get less symptoms when you get up. So you don't cough, you don't feel, swallow everything. The anesthesia drugs that she gives you, it's really good. It's less symptomatic. And also, when you're on the table, I remember that clearly. that under my legs, I felt like something moving. You know, when you go in a big chair and you have massage on the big chair? I felt like this under my leg. And I was asking, what is it? Why it's moving? And the nurse said to me, we're moving your circulation even with the surgery. So you get less problem when you're going to wake up. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to feel all, how do you say the name in English? When you feel like...
like lethargic, like
too much heavy inside.
Like if you feel lethargic and tired.
That's it. This is the word. I understand it. So you don't feel that because of that, and also she's doing a type of surgery that's called nerve block. I don't know if you heard about that, mm-hmm. but nerve block, it's just that inside when she opens you, she knows where to pinch the nerve. So when she stopped the circulation of the nerve, so when you wake up, you don't feel it because she stopped it. So when you pinch it, and I just say pinch. I don't know if she pinch or whatever, but I know she's doing something there that it stops the feeling of the pain. So maybe it's the reason why I felt better at taking it out than take some that put in one inside.
Mm-hmm.
That was . And I would just like you, I waited more than two months to start doing something.
I walked straight away. I waited until she sort of said I could sit on a stationary bike and sort of started that a week afterwards. But then, anything else after that, I did wait because I feel better when my body gets to move a little bit, but, too much and then, so I only started walking around the block that I live on. So it's like 10 minutes. And then I sort of slowly built that up because I'd get tired otherwise. And that's when you start putting your recovery back. Have there been any other lifestyle changes that you have made since you explanted 4.5 years ago?
Yes, everything changed because I can walk, I can work, I can walk, I can run, I can do whatever I have, I can eat. I can sleep, I can go to the restaurant. Like all my life was stopped before I get explanted.
Mm-hmm.
I was bedridden. I was really sick and in pain, really deeply in pain. So now everything is normal. I wish I was 25 again. That cannot change. So mm-hmm. I cannot go back for that. But I know I'm in good shape still for my age, but I wish I could be better.
Don't we all?
That's the change.
If you could go back and talk to your younger self before you had your breast implant in, what would you say?
If I was going back at 17 years old, I would probably say to the doctor that he's wrong telling me that my intimate life will be not good with two unshaped breasts. And I would say I don't need that. I would have respected my inner side that I feel I need to be real and not to be fake because mm-hmm. I've suffered not only physically but emotionally and for self-esteem for 30 years, knowing that I was having a breast implant inside of me, I feel ashamed. So mm-hmm. if I needed to go back, I would say, please don't go there because you're not going to be happy.
Yeah. Going back to when that doctor said to you that you had different shaped breasts, was it something that you had noticed yourself and that you were worried about before he said it?
I think I noticed this, but I don't think it would bother me like too not to have an intimate life. I don't think it would at that time bother me that much. I think I just notice and live with it, because I could not do nothing with this. And if there was a problem, probably I would have wear something inside my bra just to fix it better, to fix it equal. I mean, maybe, I don't know, because at 17, I did nothing before. I didn't pay attention to that as much. I don't remember that. No. So I think it's him who make me feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's his word and his eye looking at me that make me feel not good.
That's not right.
I think many women is like this too. If women go back in their life, who said something to them? I think many of us, we have that problem.
For sure.
You're very nice to invite me in your podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I think I've said everything about my life, and I hope I didn't say too much.
No,
I hope
perfect.
I hope people like it, and I hope people understand me, correctly with my English.
So if there is anyone that's listening today that would like to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Oh, they can reach out to me on Facebook, and then they can message me with the private message. I all the time take the time to answer to everyone, because I think it's important to listen and to guide someone if they need help for something. And if there's something they really need, I can after that give my email address, because sometimes I send document when they need some. I found some link too. I can give them references, but they can go especially on the website of JPAC. It's the website that I'm with other women, that we all together to give the consent information, so the woman can do the clear choices for a surgery, especially for the breast implant or for the mesh also, because this is another subject. And they can go on that, or they can go on the Facebook JPAC, or they can go on my Facebook, and we can get in touch over there.
Perfect. Thank you. I'll put all of those details in the show notes as well, so if anyone wants to find them, there'll be the links in there.
Yes.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Julie, for joining me. I've really enjoyed having you on the podcast, and thank you for sharing your story.
Okay, thank you very much to invite me.
No bye-bye. Worries. This podcast shares my own experience and research. I'm not a medical or health professional. You can find me on Instagram at couldbeiipodcast. Thank you to my incredibly talented partner, Jacob Tengdahl, for the intro and outro music. All recording, editing, and artwork is done by me. Thank you.